So we're studying Shantideva. And this is a new book, Cliff. I don't know if you know about this book. It's Pema Chodron.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's her commentary on the poem, the long poem that Shantideva wrote 2,000 years ago. So we're at number chapter 4 today. Vigilance, awareness, carefulness. Thank you, Dan. Pema Chodron names this chapter Using Our Intelligence. Thanks. I like the story of Shantideva creating this long poem for himself. There are several stories. One is that he was taunted by his fellow monks because he was such a lazy slob and never did any work at all. And they challenged him to give a Dharma talk. And then this was the Dharma talk he gave. And as he gave it, he rose higher and higher until at the very end he just disappeared into the heavens to the awe and amazement of everyone. But the other story is that they know that he put together a collection of the teachings that had the most meaning for him, a kind of anthology, and that this came afterward as a kind of encouragement to himself to practice. And when I read it that way, it makes me feel very close to him. He's full of kind of warnings, you know, be careful. It can be really bad. You can make a lot of mistakes. And then kind of encourages him, but you can do it. You can do it, see? And try it this way and try it that way. I think it's actually how we often do our practice. It's not just one sort of straight line from one place to another. We're just stumbling through our life, really, and doing the very best we can. And self-encouragement is extremely important. And as he says in this chapter, vigilance. It's one thing to get the idea of it and even be truly inspired, but another to find a way to completely incorporate our life as practice. You can't say you bring it into your life. It's more like it all grows up together. And it needs encouragement. I think our life needs encouragement, actually, from ourselves and from our peers and superiors and inferiors, or however that works, the little Buddhas and the big Buddhas. We really can't do it carelessly. And probably we've all discovered that by now, that too much carelessness and an edge gets lost, or focus gets lost, maybe I could say. It becomes distracted and blurry. So it's really about how we can keep ourselves to be where we are, to encourage ourselves to be who we are, not something else or somewhere else or somebody else. So the two topics in this are being attentive, careful, aware, vigilant, or intelligent. Using our intelligence rather than going on automatic. Waking up and then waking up again and being willing to wake up again after that. And the other is working with emotions. Very powerful and problematic challenge for all of us, especially for all of our passions and all of our hatreds. All the ways that we react to life as somebody separate, somebody special, somebody different. There's me, and then there's everybody else. And with that, then the me has to be carefully protected. And so those kleshas are what keep us surrounded by some sort of protective armor. So how we are with that it's called the dualistic perception of I and you, of how we it's a thought. It's just one of our many thoughts. But having that thought, then we base our actions and reactions on it as if it were the reality. And so a great deal of the awareness and carefulness is about being very awake to how we perceive our life. So the solution to the kleshas in a simple way is just to stay open to realizing that our thinking is just our thinking and not be driven by it. To be interested and curious, it's very useful, but not to be driven by what we think. And not to be driven by the dualistic proposition that I and you are at bottom completely different and can never meet. So in a way you can say the Bodhisattva project is to meet each thing, everything, to be willing to meet. And to keep mindful of where she is and what's before him. So Shantideva talks about these strong emotions as the enemy and vows to do it in a very dramatic way. I'm going to get that enemy and beat it up and swords through it. And then he talks about our mistakes, how closing our mind, he said four mistakes, closing our minds, halting the merit of a bodhisattva, destroying anyone's joy, and destroying bodhicitta through one's unaddressed faults. It's a very strange little list, but useful if we look at our life. It's one way of examining how our life is working. Halting the merit of a bodhisattva. Can't quite imagine how that would work. I guess luring somebody into into some not very healthy enterprise, luring somebody into a way to cheat or break the law or hurt somebody, but destroying anyone's joy. Some people thrive on that as a way of feeling slightly better. It's one way that our mind goes when we're suffering greatly and when we're very bewildered and confused. And destroying bodhicitta through our unaddressed faults is obvious, really. And then he goes on to the five faults of the kleshas. enslaved by them, liking them, knowing they'll last forever, and indulging them. And after all this moralistic fervor, he says, well, but in the end, this is all a mirage. This too is all thinking. It's all ideas. So the best way of dealing with them as they come along is to look them in the eye. So it comes back to that old business of when there's something troubling, instead of turning away, to turn and be straight with it, to not deviate from it, to be completely there for it. Whatever it is. That's the hard thing, the hard bodhisattva step, is to not turn away. Be willing to look. And it's a kind of measure of maturity. You know, some, when we're young, we always say, oh, Jimmy did it. It's Jimmy's fault. Or somebody's fault, it has to be, without actually sitting still and finding where Jimmy and I are one activity, one being, one organism in this huge organism we call the universe. So we need both sides, really. We need the moralistic side just to keep us, at least I should talk about myself. I need it. And I wouldn't be surprised if you needed it too at some time or another. It just comes in really handy to remember that we don't have to have to lose ourselves in what are called the kleshas, the grave mistakes or the faults. That we have a choice. That our mind can work clearly if we want to think clearly and devote ourselves to it, to be the intelligence that we are. It's actually a whole lot more fun. It's much more interesting to be awake, to see what's and feel what's really happening. Even if it's embarrassing for oneself or even shameful, it's still exhilarating to see how things really are, to admit it, and then know how to act, or at least be open to true action, honest action. So that's what this chapter is about. The last thing he says is not to mind the hurt. So looking things in the eye doesn't mean that it isn't painful, because that it is painful. But it's painful like sitting is painful. You know, if you think about it and make up a big story about it, it's one kind of pain. But if you give yourself to the doing of it, it's fulfillment. And facing our maras, our mistakes, our misunderstandings, is also painful. But it's fulfilling. So, are there questions? Dan?
Lauren probably knows more about the physics than I do, but I believe that the physicists have discovered that in the universe, the natural order of things is disorder. So when there's a sun or when there's an earth, it lasts for a short period of time, relatively speaking. Eventually it's going to go away. That most of space actually is just empty.
Mm.
And we're lucky that clumps of it are been put together in the form of us and the Milky Way and then our solar system and so on and so forth. Now, you said at the beginning that, kind of as a prelude, that you thought that it was about being able to see, and you used the word focus. I mean, there are many synonyms for that. But what I think is very interesting by parallel thought to that is I believe that the natural order of our life is to be focused. And that what's preventing us are all these things, these delusions, these fears, the little self, all the synonyms for that get in the way of all the synonyms for being here.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost counterintuitive that the natural order of your life would be order in the sense of it is as it is perfectly, or as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the universe in a physical sense is one of disorder. In some sense, it's really not order, I guess, that focus is. It's just seeing it as it is. Is that right?
Yes. I woke up this morning from a dream in which I was saying something like that. I was saying, the chaos of the wild radishes doesn't need to be put into order.
Wow. That was a dream?
That was a dream. Those are the words that I woke up with this morning.
That wasn't quite what I was thinking about. Okay.
Well, you weren't talking about the wild radishes, but I don't know where that came from. But But it is what you're talking
it
about.
Is.
Yeah.
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You gave me a scientific explanation for that dream.
So in terms of our practice, though, does that mean then that even, for example, trying to, quote, wipe away the dust on the mirror is itself a dirtying? Non-neutral activity. It's another thing that causes a smudge.
Depends on how you do it.
Just let it be is better?
No, it depends on how you do it. Mm-hmm. You actually have to keep at the mirror. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, not be caught by it. Mm-hmm. You know, we are here and we are as we are and we need to take care of ourselves and each other. And so in that sense, we're always cleaning things up and taking care. Mm-hmm. But if we get hooked into it and identified with it and possessive of it, then all of a sudden it's the mirror that Weineng was talking about that doesn't exist. There's no mirror in that way. The only way the mirror exists as all of us together.
Again, little mirror and big mirror almost.
Yes, kind of like that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Kitty?
Can you explain more about this kleshas and strong emotions?
Well, Dalai Lama talks a lot. He has a whole book about, a lot of people have books about strong emotions. It's a big subject. It's called the three poisons. Oh. Greed, anger, and ignorance, we say, or desire, hatred and delusion. There are a lot of different ways of talking about it. The ignorance is ignorance of our true nature, which is the ignorance of how everything is connected and how we're not separate. So it's just what I said, that with that sense of separation, then we have to either, with anger, push things away to get them out of our way so they won't bother us, me, or get more of everything and bring it in to enhance and polish up and make even more important the great me. But in any case, those emotions are based on a misunderstanding.
So I guess when I hear the word emotions, I think feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Ignorance to me is not,
that's
not a feeling.
No, well,
maybe it causes feelings.
It is even a feeling as if you think of it as a choice. If you choose not to feel for others, or you choose to go with your anger in an attacking kind of way, that is an action of ignorance. I mean, that is an emotion of ignorance. They're all connected. There are different ways of talking about one way that we are in the world.
So strong emotions means those three things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and everything
all
that...
All
the feelings that go with them can all be traced back to them. Traced back to the original ignorance.
So it sounds almost like you're saying you shouldn't have any feelings.
No, it's not. It's to see them, to acknowledge and recognize them, and not be driven by them. You know, either we can drive our own car or something, some crazed character can drive our car. You could look at it that way.
I guess it just feels like your feelings usually have something to tell you.
Yes. Yes, it's not saying throw.
Trying to avoid my feelings.
Yes.
It sounds like it's saying to do the opposite. So.
No, it's saying to see and recognize and live them fully. I mean, let it come all the way through. That's what I meant about facing it, not turning away, but actually facing what you really feel and seeing what it is, which means seeing how you relate to things. So it's about how our relationship is existing in the world also. Yeah?
Could an example be, the other day I got some communication and it was that somebody I know was doing a poetry reading. And it was interesting because I go, they asked her, not me. Because it was something that it's a very prestigious thing. And it was interesting. Because I would have normally just put it away, and perhaps when I saw the next person, maybe I would be rough with her or something. But this time, for me, and if I'm following it right, ignorance would be if I didn't pay attention to the feeling that I had, which was, I went, oh, isn't that funny? Jealousy. I'm really jealous about this. And then I, started thinking to myself, well, I'm really happy. I know her. I think she deserves this. And this is great. And, isn't that interesting to have this feeling of jealousy to come up? And it really did surprise me. It's not very common, to have this feeling of jealousy. It's kind of... But, and that arose out of, could be greed, because I wanted what she got, or it could be, I could have responded then in anger by being upset with her, or me. I could have really gotten mad at myself, too. I mean, I still can. I have that opportunity. And then the ignorance would be as if I didn't respond or didn't see that I was having this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it is all mooshed together.
Yes.
And so it's not like not paying attention to your feelings. I mean, that's my understanding. Because I'm right there with you. Pay attention, And then be able to work with it. And that's where, I guess, our skillfulness comes.
Yeah. Yeah. And forgiveness.
Yeah,
I mean, once we know how truly silly we are in so many ways, we can forgive ourselves for it as well. We don't have to be so, so self-absorbed that we... that it's each time we see something like that it's such a bad thing. It's just, oh my gosh, we humans are such fools in so many ways.
Yeah. I mean, and the whole thing happens just kind of like this. But I believe that it's that going that second next layer, not just identifying, ooh, this feels weird, but then going, I believe is what, not to be enslaved by this or whatnot, it's just to go the further down and look more. So it's not ignoring. I mean, we can't, And then the other thing I was thinking, why jealousy? Why would that come up? Well, it's got to be like a primitive thing again. She's getting the meat. I'm not, or something. I don't know.
This is all very, it's all very primitive. I think it's all really primitive.
I think there's some semantical confusion here. Aren't there some emotions that we should cultivate, such as compassion and kindness? So I think that kleshas specifically are the ones we should not.
Yes, 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 exactly. And there's a long list of them. Maybe I should have brought that long list in. It's kind of depressing.
My understanding was with the middle way, it's kind of like between love and hate, so to speak. I don't know how that works in the context of the cliches. But I'm not sure if we could, I mean, as people, as human beings, I'm not sure if we could necessarily get rid of, like, these... things that, I don't know, I think there's something we say, there's part of our brains, like, you know, getting jealous of something that we want. I don't know, it's somewhat of a natural thing as animals, but that doesn't necessarily mean it turns into some destructive.
Well, for animals it's not destructive, but humans make it destructive because we can think. So we create a self around our emotions, our negative emotions. That's what it's talking about, how we create ourself out of nothing. I mean, just out of nothing.
How about, like, aren't we creating a self with, like, positive, like, you know, people going around thinking that they're, you know, this is very, like Jesus Christ, for example, like the embodiment of love. I mean,
But you could look at Jesus as one of the ones who no longer was involved with himself. He was a selfless, and we remember him because he was selfless. Because his love was so encompassing that he was willing to go all the way with it. And all the great teachers were that way. Buddha was lucky. He got to live to be 80. But he too just dedicated his whole life to others, to the well-being and to loving others. So it's that thing that gets, it's our self-consciousness that prevents us from that 100% gift of ourself to ourself, really, to the whole self of us.
I just saw the movie Requiem for a Dream.
I haven't seen it.
It's very disturbing. Well, it's a disturbing movie, but at the end, it's like about addiction, like specifically drug addiction, I guess, but just how it affects people's lives, and like people who genuinely cared about each other, it ruined that addiction, ruins the
yes.
kinds of relationships we have.
Yes.
And one of the things the author did say was like that whole like give me has to give way to like the giving. It's
yes.
Like, it's what where it's at is the giving and not like the taking.
That's the first paramita for the bodhisattva practice. Precisely. Excellent, Jules.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's 8 o'clock.